From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 19th day of November 2019. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo, globalanalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas. And a bit later in the program, we'll be joined by Eric Snodgrass from Agrible and Nutrient Ag Solutions to take a look at the weather forecast on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org. And there today, you can sign up and register for the upcoming Illinois Farm Economic Summits. Those take place across the state of Illinois the week of December the 16th in Mount Vernon, Springfield, East Peoria, DeKalb, and Champaign.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Either way, the numbers finished up in Chicago on this Friday afternoon. December corn today at $3.70.5, up 7 3/4. The March 7 3/4 higher at $3.81, and the May at $3.85.5, up 6.5 cents. July 3.95 3/4 higher, and December at $3.92, up 3. January beans down 5.5 cents at $8.76.5. The March at $8.91, 5.5 lower, and the May down 5 1/4 at $9.05.5. July soybeans down a nickel at $9.18 1/4. November at $9.27 3/4 down 3.5 cents. Soybean oil up 7 at $30.44. Bean meal at $2.90 down $2.90. Wheat futures December contract 18 3/4 higher in the lead at $5.47 1/4. The July, the harvest month at $5.42 1/2, up 11 cents. And hard red July at $4.61 1/4, up 9 for the day. Live cattle futures December contract 12.5 lower, $121.30 the settlement price. February there at $126.25 down 45 cents. Feeder cattle in the January at $142.47 1/2 down 85 cents. The March at $143.30, 62 1/2 lower, and lean hogs on the day. Finished the December contract at $62 even, up $1.32 1/2. February at $68.25, $1.10 higher. We're now joined by Mike Zuzulo. He's at globalanalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas. Hey, Michael, thanks for being with us. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving.
I hope you did too. We were very blessed and nice to have a day off to be able to celebrate and be around family and friends. So hope all the listeners did as well, Todd.
Hey, speaking of nice, there was a nice little rally in the corn market today. What do you know about it?
You know, the big thing that I think was nice about this week, especially and how we closed it out, was the fact that we started in the wheat market with the 15-cent rally on Monday. We had really good price supportive exports, both in terms of inspections and weekly export sales, pretty much across the board. And then we saw quite a bit of problems in the European wheat market in terms of France having some real weather issues. And we knew about all this stuff, but yet the market was still stuck in midweek with the corn and beans going down to their lowest levels since the middle part of September, essentially since the September WASDE report. And I think when you draw a line between those two differences between good fundamental news, good supply-demand news, bullish price-friendly weather, especially when it comes to corn harvest and wheat planting over in Europe, why wouldn't the market go up? I think, and the wheat was the only one that was kind of separating itself from everybody else. I think it really was kind of giving us an indication before Friday's trade that the trade was still stuck in the U.S.-China trade negotiations, still stuck with taking the dollar up to fresh seven-week highs, still stuck essentially buying stocks and selling commodities. I don't want to rely too heavily upon Friday because it was a lighter trading volume day, Todd, but I really do feel like the deliveries coming in so low, zero for wheat and the soft red, zero for corn, 11 contracts for hard red wheat. I think that kind of allowed the funds to come in and treat corn more like the wheat on Friday and kind of leaving the beans to themselves as we go through another week end of trade negotiation frustrations, especially from a standpoint of the Chinese calling the UDS ambassador to Beijing, in Beijing, to the Chinese leadership when President Trump signed the pro-democracy Hong Kong bill. But that short covering, I think, was pent up from the beginning of the week and a lot of good supply-demand fundamentals.
Can the coarse grains, the rally in the corn and the wheat a couple of times this week, set a tone for the rest of the year?
I hope they do. I think they should. I mean, when you see the ethanol production numbers getting back to levels not seen since before the slowdown announced by several, you know, plants, you see the Decatur basis really jumping on ethanol demand. And then you see the stocks levels get down to levels not seen since, you know, 2017, essentially. I think you have fundamentals along with really still bad weather in Argentina when it comes to getting the rest of the corn planted, and a significant drought in three provinces that make up about two-thirds of the typical corn production. I've got six or seven different reasons, not to mention the fact that the wheat corn spread is now dancing on $1.70 a bushel. Why the corn shouldn't go higher, especially with these deliveries. If they stay light, I think the spread should kick in, and that would help the futures.
By how much? Do you have an upside potential?
Yeah, I mean, the March contract I've always felt like should get up to around $3.95 to $4. And, you know, for the Red Dees or the December 20 corn, I feel like that $4.25 to $4.35 level is a fair price. Both of those fair prices, I would not put those near overvalue levels, but I think that's a very fair price based upon what the cash basis has done. We're still trading 3 to 5 cents over the spot bid here in Atchison. I just got off the phone with a client near Peoria, and or a contact near Peoria, and he was talking about how there's no ground piles there locally. I think you've got a lot of reasons out there to at least get a 15-cent rally and essentially play catch-up with the cash market.
You think if we do get another 15 cents in the corn market, the cash basis will run right along with it?
No, I don't. I think that the cash basis will probably try to stay as firm as it can until the farmers start to let go of more. And I say that because we've got a real interesting dynamic build up here in the commitment of traders and the way the funds versus the commercials are trading. We've essentially taken the commercials from a net short of about 10,000 contracts to even long. They're actually probably long at this point during the harvest time period, while the funds have built up another 200,000 plus net short positions. So I think the funds are out of position. Commercials are in very good position. So if farmers start to sell on a 15-cent rally, I don't know why they would keep their basis the same.
So Dees 20, if we get a rally to that 420, 425 area, which has been, roughly speaking, with the exception of the mid-summer run, kind of the top end of the range for to take in contracts over the last couple of years, do producers need to take advantage of it for new crop corn?
I think so. I mean, if you get a $4 cash price and you can get fields that will do 220 bushels of corn yield, you're talking of, or even 212 bushels of corn yield, you're breaking through that $850 gross revenue level. And I, you know, we've talked about this quite a bit this year and last year, Todd. I'm a gross revenue per acre kind of guy. And if I can get $850 to $950 on corn, why would I turn that down? And the same with the soybeans when it comes to the $650 to $750 level. So I think you really do want to use some really good risk management practices and at least start picking and choosing those better fields that you typically rely upon on your farm and say, why don't I lock in that 80 acres since I can get 212 to 220 on a good year, and then lock myself into 850 plus for gross revenue.
Given what's been happening with the trade negotiations and the politics over the last week, I'm wondering what you're thinking about the soybean market, simply because the Chinese really haven't been in that market now for 18 months or so. Does it matter very much anymore? Or have we found a stable area for soybeans?
I think we're getting there, because at the end of the week, even with the market down a nickel or so in the soybeans on the futures market, our cash beans at the Gulf and, for that matter, out of the Pacific Northwest are still running about $15 to $20 lower per ton than Brazil and Paranagua cash beans. I think we're getting there, and I think that their need for soybeans, as long as the African swine fever doesn't have a second outbreak, I think they're there. I think the biggest issue the trade contended with this week and probably heading into next week when it comes to the soybeans is the idea that China will cancel soybean sales or soybean exports that they put on with us in retaliation for President Trump signing the pro-democracy bill. But when I saw the weekly export sales of Friday that were delayed a day coming in at 61.1 million bushels, and the fact that we sent out another two-thirds more than that when it came to actual exports, you know, we sent out a marketing year high of physical exports on the weekly sales report, and we sent out of 2.25 million metric tons, we sent China 1.5 million tons of that. So that's essentially on the water. That's essentially something they can't take back. So to answer your question, I think at this price level, the U.S.-China trade negotiation deal has less and less long-lasting impact. It may spike us lower, but I don't think it'll last very long.
Yeah, so they had agreed at one point to buy about, I think, 10 million metric tons. Most of those have not been shipped. Do you think they will be?
Yeah, I mean, last I saw, we were looking at about 3.5 million tons that they could still wipe off the books. So I do think that they will continue to buy because they did get it locked in at a fairly low price compared to what they would have gotten or could get out of Brazil. You know, the Brazilian price has gone from about $380 a ton to about $365 a ton. It's not that much cheaper. And with Argentina pretty much out of the game at this point, in my opinion, when it comes to shipping meal, I don't think the Chinese have the ability or would want to take the risk of really stepping on the soybeans at this stage as they try and rebuild a historically bad pork industry. I mean, when you see retail prices up 130, 140, 150% from last year, and people and their main staple food of pork dumplings literally not being able to make them, I don't think the Chinese government would want to step into that quagmire anymore. But that's, I think, what the trade's trying to work out.
Any final word on the livestock before I let you go?
Yeah, we're pushing hard on the cattle hog spread, Todd. We're pushing a premium into the cattle versus the hogs. One of two things I think is going to have to happen. Either the cash cattle is going to have to come in very strong and support the futures, or I think the market's getting primed for a reversal of that spread where short covering comes into hogs and the long liquidation mindset will come into the fat cattle, because I think we're running very similar to 2015 where we made a peak seasonally right around the 1st of December.
Hey, thanks so much.
Hey, thank you, Todd. Have a great rest of your holiday weekend, sir.
You too. That, of course, is Mike Zuzulo. He's with globalanalytics.biz. Hey, don't forget to visit our website at willag.org. There you'll find a link to the Illinois Farm Economic Summits and a way to register for those programs. I'll be on the road the week of December the 16th with the Ag Economist from the University of Illinois. You can register today at willag.org or at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Let's turn our attention now on this Friday to the weather forecast. We're joined by Eric Snodgrass from Agrible. Hey, Eric, thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, thank you.
So let's start by talking about this blizzard in the Northern Plains. What's it like?
Yeah, well, this is round two, right? So round one basically painted a pretty heavy snow swath from Colorado to Nebraska, parts of northwestern Iowa, but certainly southeastern South Dakota, and then went toward the Great Lakes. And so that was round number one earlier this week, the pre-Thanksgiving storm, and now the post-Thanksgiving storm is cranking. And this one is a little bit larger in scope, although I don't think we'll have quite as fierce of winds around this one over us. But to the north, it is going to be some strong winds. They've got winter storm warnings that stretch from Montana to Wisconsin, and north-south, they go from Kansas clear up to North Dakota. So this is a big dog that's moving through the mid part of the country, and the potential for dropping quite a bit of snow across the Dakotas, Minnesota, parts of Nebraska, Wyoming. I mean, we're seeing maybe a foot of additional snowfall here. And the winds in that region are going to be nasty. So where we are, we're going to be on the south side of this initially. So we'll see rain throughout the day today here on Friday, kind of slowly spreading toward us from the south and west, such that by this evening, it's later on this afternoon, actually, by this evening, it'll be across much of central Illinois. And then that will push through the day, part of the day on Saturday. Then as the low wraps itself out, it's going to curl back over us here in central Illinois. We might even get a chance on Sunday for, a little bit of a wintry mix. So don't be surprised if on Sunday, if you're traveling home, anybody's traveling home around the state, we get some of the white stuff flying around. So that's this next system. We've had two powerhouse low pressure systems move through the country, and they've all been born out of California lately.
So we have not talked about much, at least yet, the polar vortex. Is that in play this year?
It is. And what's interesting right now is that the pattern for a short while after these two big systems crank through is going to calm down in the mid part of the country. So depending on how much precip we do get, because we might maybe in parts of central Illinois pick up an inch of rain out of this next big system coming through. Well, after that, if things calm down and dry out, we can kind of help thank, you know, that pattern change to the polar vortex. And here's what I'm talking about. Right now, sitting over parts of North America, deep in the troposphere, that's the layer we live in, and at the base of the stratosphere, that's the next layer above us, the heights are building. In other words, the atmosphere is just pushing up real hard. And if it does that, that cold air that should be sitting there gets kind of just dumped off in either direction. Now, a year ago when that happened, back in January, the cold air split over Siberia, and it split right over, well, us, and we dropped down to ridiculously cold temperatures. Well, this time it's splitting more west to east in that regard. So it's going to be hitting like far western, eastern Russia, and also the other side, which is going to be in parts of Europe. And so this split that we're watching here is going to allow our pattern to relax for a little while and maybe give us some warmer weather as we move into the month of December. But that's all going to, remember, that's all going to rotate around. So at some point in mid-December, we're going to get a pretty good blast of some colder air as the polar vortex kind of thrashes about there deep in the upper layers of the atmosphere. So yeah, it's the first significant polar vortex event of, the end of 2019 and beginning of 2020.
Have you got an inkling of what the longer-term forecast looks like?
You know, I do. I've spent the last month trying to build up this picture, and it's a lot of times what folks want out of meteorologists is like, all right, tell me exactly what the whole of winter is going to look like. But we know from experience that winter is never always just one way. So I honestly think that winter this year is going to show up in three acts, and I think we're in Act One right now. And Act One is dominated by, I think, two big things. One is the fact that we've got this polar vortex split that's happening. And the other part of it is the fact that the Indian Ocean dipole is still really cranked up into this positive mode. And so it's the thing that's affecting all of the moisture transport out of the tropics that's kind of cramming into California right now, that's running into Alaska, and that gave us a pretty volatile pattern, you know, recently. So I think that's Act One, and it's going to last for another few weeks here. So you're going to see California continue to get more and more precip. Now, what Act Two will begin once this polar vortex event shifts around and the Indian Ocean dipole begins to calm down. I think that's going to happen around the first of the year. And when that happens, that's going to change up our whole ocean dynamics pattern, and we're going to leave the North Pacific to be the more dominant feature. And when that occurs, I think we're going to see what we call a strong subtropical jet stream emerge. And that generally brings the West into a warmer regime, and that tends to really throw strong winds across the southern part of the United States that then race to the Northeast. And that's a very active pattern. So we may go into a midwinter, very active pattern. Here's what I think Act Three is going to be. In Act Three, I'm going to be watching off the west coast of South America, because when the Indian Ocean dipole collapses and the warm North Pacific is the dominant feature, that's Act Two, I think we're going to have to watch the ocean temperatures just off of the west coast of South America to cool. And if they start to cool off, which there are some indications they may, that would send the end of our winter into more La Nina-like conditions. Now, if that happens, every farmer should be really excited for me to say those words for spring. And that's because if we can get there in spring with a bit of a La Nina going on, we may have a decent planting time period, unlike we've had last year. So that's my long-winded answer to your very short question as to how I think winter's going to play out. And I'm just going to tell you this, whenever you think the pattern is settled into one regime, it's going to change, because this winter is going to be one that is quite volatile in terms of changing patterns.
Well, that is good news, at least on the La Nina part, because I was looking at dates for the all-day agricultural outlook, and I had three dates that were in mind. Usually we do it the first or the second week of March. The second week of March is a World Ag Supply and Demand Estimate report from USDA. None of the brokers want to be at the beef house on that day. That's the 10th. The third week of March, then I moved to, which is the 17th, and I thought, you know, if we happen to have a really good spring, and we're started and dry, given the lateness of this fall, I'll never be able to move farmers to the beef house. So we scheduled
it. Especially St. Patrick's Day.
So we scheduled it for the third day of March. That's just a heads up for folks. Now, you mentioned the dipole and South America. Can you put that into play as it relates to their crop conditions?
Yeah, this morning I had an exchange back and forth over the internet with a guy who's down in Brazil. Because when we look at some of the data, it would not suggest that things are terribly dry. Yet the conversation that I had with this guy was he was saying, hey, you know, it's been raining, but it's not enough. Overall, the deficit that they carried in from the end of their winter now into their spring was substantial enough that it's not something that's been easily overcome. So what he says is, you know, it's like we talk about here in the U.S. where we say, well, how big is the garden spot here across the Midwest? He's just saying we got spotty reports of great conditions and we got spotty reports of bad conditions. It's not this one big uniform, you know, decent picture. Overall, the moisture transports out of the tropics into the northern hemisphere rather than feeding the Brazilian monsoon. So the place that was hit hardest earliest, which would have been like Mato Grosso do Sul, Minas Gerais, northern parts of Paraná, those areas over the next week to 10 days are actually going to be quite wet. And some places down there, they're trying to replant. So this has been a less than ideal planting season, especially compared to last year where they were done by now. I mean, they were flying getting the first crop soybeans in. And so the chatter that I'm hearing down there is that there's concern over how much and how aggressively they're going to go after Safrinha corn and Safrinha cotton, just given the conditions that they've had so far. But of course, that all comes back over to you and your expertise, which is what will the market demand be? What will the prices be by the time we get into January? I will say this, when the Indian Ocean dipole collapses, which more than likely will happen toward the end of this month, getting into January, okay? When that collapses, imagine it filling all back in over Australia. That will actually send the Mann-Julian Oscillation over probably into phases 3, 4, and 5. Now, why that matters for us is if it gets over into phase 3, 4, and 5, that is also a drier pattern for Brazil. And if that occurs in January, well, that would be a critical time period for soybean pod filling. Now, I've strung together for you a sequence of events where if everything lines up, they have trouble. But remember, I'm looking out here 6 weeks in advance, and I'm just putting together the best meteorological picture. And at this point, my confidence in all of that lining up perfectly is low. Why I'm saying it is that if we need to watch for any adverse weather that's coming out of Brazil, it's going to be that, because we've already seen the delays they've had and the uneven moisture, stresses coming out of most of Brazil's major growing areas. So we've got a lot to watch down there, and it will certainly impact, I think, our markets as we move into the new year.
Hey, thanks so much. I really appreciate it.
Yep, thank you.
That, of course, is Eric Snodgrass. He is with Agrible and Nutrien Ag Solutions. Join us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Hey, don't forget to visit our website at willag.org. There you'll find a link to the Illinois Farm Economic Summits and a way to register for those programs. I'll be on the road the week of December the 16th with the Ag Economist from the University of Illinois. The summits are a half-day event, and you'll learn from Scott Irwin and Todd Hubbs and Gary Schnitke and others all about the economics of farming in the state of Illinois. We'll be in Mount Vernon December the 16th, followed up by events on Tuesday in Springfield, East Peoria Wednesday, Thursday in DeKalb, and Friday right here in Champaign. You can register today at willag.org or at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.